Spirit Catholic Radio, KVSS. We are Catholic Radio for the Christian community. Welcome to Spirit Mornings. I'm Bruce McGregor. She is
Chris McGregor.
And today, Chris, it's always a treat to have back to the program with us Amy Welburn. Amy has an MA in religion from Vanderbilt University, also taught high school theology for 9 years, and is the author of the previous Prove It titles, including Prove It God and Prove It Church. Her best-selling titles include Decoding Da Vinci, The Facts Behind the Fiction of the Da Vinci Code. By the way, that's been translated into 7 different languages. Amy is joining us today. We're going to be talking about Prove It You, the latest addition to that very popular Prove It series that also includes Prove It, the Catholic Teen Bible, all available from our Sunday visitor as well, and available to us, and we're delighted to have her here, Amy Welburn. Welcome, Amy.
Oh, it's great to be here, as it always is.
Amy, this is such a great series for not just teens. I keep giving it to all the adults I know.
Oh!
I think we have a difficult time trying to articulate our faith in a culture that is so used to sound bites and reading things off a television screen or off our computer screen.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. And it's, but faith is complex, too. You know, I mean, so that daunts people when they're even trying to start to explain things.
You're the only person I know, though, and this is all hats off to you. Bruce and I have talked theology of the body with so many different people, and it is such a big tome, and you're the only person I know that could bring it down to about a page and a half.
Oh, really?
And makes sense.
Yes, completely.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I hope I didn't strip it down too much.
But. No, not at all. And when I say that, I think it's because it is such a wonderful starting point for all of us to understand why God has created us the way he has.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the thing that, especially us communicating to not only youth, our kids, but I think we need that as well as adults.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, most of us, you know, who are Catholic were raised, you know, without this kind of substantive, really sort of, you know, coherent thinking about sexuality in this way. And, you know, it's a great gift to the church, and it's a great gift to all of us. It just makes, you know, sort of, is such a deeply spiritual way of looking at this very important life, and it just lays the groundwork for so many other things.
In all seriousness, Amy, here in the Omaha area, we just had a tremendous tragedy that affected our community, and it has taken all of us aback because it was so unexpected. And the young man who walked into a quiet store on a weekday, went up to the third floor and shot innocent people and then killed himself, wrote in a note that essentially he felt he was an expletive.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was going to go out in glory. He was, right. Here is somebody who had lost a job at McDonald's, had lost his girlfriend. Essentially, his parents divorced when he was 3, and he had been made a part of the system very early in his life, and essentially didn't have a home. And he really felt he was nothing and didn't have anything. And it was the epitome of sheer hopelessness.
Yeah.
And we need to have that sense, and we have to instill in everyone we can touch the sense that just the title is so appropriate. I mean, you were created for a purpose.
That's right. And, you know, it's something that I tell my own children, my teenager children, and something that when I was teaching, you know, I really tried to emphasize, you know, this, what you're talking about expresses so tragically why faith really is a matter of life and death.
Mm-hmm.
Why it really does matter if you believe that God is real and God created you out of passion and love. It doesn't automatically fix all of our problems
mm-hmm.
at all. But, you know, without that, you know, we truly are lost.
Right. I think that's what's taken all of us aback, because normally in the situation, even if he were some 30-some-year-old man who was angry about something walked in, we would have something to be angry at. But so many people that I've talked to and everyone, what he did was wrong. You cannot accept the unacceptable. However, what brought him to this point is like, what are we fostering? Where is the culture of life here that we should be fostering with our children?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I think that's why the Prove It series is so good, because I think you have this wonderful way of being able to break open And in particular, in this book, Prove It You, why your life is so important.
Yeah, it's a book that is essentially about discipleship. For those of your listeners who aren't familiar with the series, it's an apologetic series for youth published by Our Sunday Visitor that I've been writing on for several years. I think I wrote the first one in 1999, fall of 99, and it was published in 2000. That was Prove It God, Prove It Church, and then Prove It Jesus and Prove It Prayer came a few years later. And they all came out of my experience teaching and working as a DRE in a parish, first from a very practical standpoint in that, Prove It God and Prove It Church in particular were written to fill a gap that I felt existed in catechetical materials. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any sense in the catechetical materials that I had that kids needed to be, equipped to answer the basic apologetics questions about who is God and, why do Catholics do this and that and that. When any of us who actually work with kids know, that's an incredibly crucial time for them. First of all, from within, it's the time that they're really starting to ask questions themselves, and they're interacting with peers who are bombarding them with questions. And so, it sort of evolved from that, and Prove It Prayer and Prove It Jesus were slightly less apologetic in nature and more just sort of straight catechetical. Again, always trying to tie it to the specifics of the reality of kids' lives. And, there had been talk between me and OSV, for a while, well, you should do another one. Someone said, well, do Prove It Mary. And I said, well, I talked about Mary and Prove It Church. And there had been conversations about doing a morality kind of book. Mm-hmm. And so I finally agreed to do that, and that this is the result of that. But I think it emerged, and the way it finally came out was not a book specifically about morality, even though that's a big part of it. But as I said, it is a book about discipleship. Mm-hmm. The title "Prove It You" isn't intended to be solipsistic or narcissistic or anything like that, because the cover, and I can't take credit for the cover. This happened very, serendipitously or by grace, because the people who designed the cover hadn't even read the manuscript before they designed it, before this idea was presented. And the cover is an image of Christ on the cross from the back. It's a close-up, and you basically see the head crowned with thorns, the cross beam, and part of his back.
Right.
And when I saw that, I was really struck by that, because it got right to the core of what I was doing in the book without them even knowing it, and that was that the core of who you are is of a child of God, and the way that you figure that out and the way that you find peace and joy is by following Christ. You, the person that you are, is found, you're going to find that person in communion with Christ and following him and being, letting him live within you. And one of the themes that sort of comes out again and again and again that ties to the cover is the theme of suffering. And perhaps we'll touch on that later. But I just felt that, there's more and more good stuff out there for teens, for Catholic teens, but it still tends to not bring out the reality and the importance of suffering. Not that we're masochists, not that we're seeking it, but mm-hmm. that suffering is a part of discipleship, and it's something, and our greatest sins come from trying to avoid suffering mm-hmm. in the short term. And so that's sort of the schema of the book, and that's the rationale for it, is that, just trying to help kids tie all of this together, this Christian life is not about just accepting ideas or following in your parents' footsteps. It is a matter of life and death, and the life that we find is in Christ.
We had a conversation with Bob Lockwood a few weeks ago where we were talking about the baby boomer generation and how, at the very least, they had a vocabulary, that they were given something, even if they weren't sure how to live out the Baltimore Catechism, but the way they were raised, at least they knew the words. so that they could begin to at least have a dialogue with someone.
Right.
And I dare say, Amy, we're on the very back end of that, you know.
Right, right.
But for many in the generation that came after us, they don't even have the vocabulary. And I'm thinking a lot of those parents, they just don't know how to verbalize it to their kids.
No, they don't. And, you know, partly, you know, because of poor catechesis, partly because of the sort of the nature of even sort of general spiritual conversation in our culture, you know, a bit, which tends to be very therapeutic and self-help and nature and all of that kind of thing. And, you know, anybody, you know, this has always become very clear to me when I was working in a parish and I would teach baptism classes to
mm-hmm.
parents.
Right.
And even in some of my dealings with other teachers in Catholic schools, God bless them, who were younger than me. I mean, there is just this real, like you say, this gap and this lack of language. And then what happens with that, and this is sort of the passion of my life and what I try to do, is that, you know, religion, their Catholic faith, does just become a set of words. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I think our greatest task is, and I think this is something that that Pope Benedict is really emphasizes. Every time I read Pope Benedict, this is what I hear, is helping us connect at this elemental way and understanding how what we recite in the Creed, what is in the Catechism, you know, is about life. It's not abstract ideas. It is about life, and it is about joy and happiness and peace. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm trying to, in my own way, communicate in this book.
I think you do it really well. I mean, even in the, for example, in helping to break open the virtues,
mm-hmm.
and how the virtues are your way of being able to live out a life, everything from prudence to temperance to,
right.
all. I mean, it's like, how do you communicate that so that you can live it?
Right. Well, you know, I had a little bit of a head start on this in my own thinking, because one of the other books I wrote, the Loyola Kids Book of Heroes, which is for younger children, for middle school age children, I organized along the line of the virtues.
Mm-hmm.
So I picked out people that exemplified, you know, the seven virtues. And, you know, when I was thinking about how do I communicate to young people what is the good life, it just seemed to me, it you know, and the good life in both senses of to be good and to find joy and happiness, you know, it just made sense to turn to this very traditional way, which even in some senses goes back, is pre-Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And to just try to unpack that for them, you know, what does it mean to have faith and hope and love and so on, and prudence and so on, and to just really try to tie it into the realities of their lives.
Right. I really wasn't joking when I said that the thing about the theology of the body for teens, because I think theology of the body is such an important tool today that we can use to understand why we're created, how we are created different, especially in the face of the culture that is trying to destroy that in us, and trying to help our children to understand in a culture where they are being pulled in so many different directions and told that they should go for it and hooking up is the way to go. And
right.
I just think being able to articulate that is imperative, especially not only for parents, but also at church, in a religious education program, in a youth group. I mean, you cannot be afraid to talk about these things.
You can't be afraid, and you also can't assume that because the kids are there in your church, or that, you know, your family goes to Mass, that your kids aren't going to be tempted, or that kids aren't even already involved in stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is starting younger and younger. I mean, my daughter is a sophomore in high school, and, you know, even in ninth grade, she goes to a public high school. You know, there were pregnant girls and, you know, young fathers, and, you know, it's something that we just have to acknowledge is, and you know, there's sometimes a real generational problem, because the pop culture that our kids are growing up in is so much coarser
mm-hmm.
than it was for us, that, you know, the things that we can't imagine even sometimes maybe, you know, saying to a spouse, or, you know, took us a long time to say to a spouse, you know, is a part of these kids' cultural baggage
mm-hmm.
that they're carrying around all the time. And, you know, parents just really have to get real and, you know, take a tour of MySpace. Mm-hmm. Take a tour of Facebook. Facebook is not as bad, but and you can't get access to Facebook unless you're a member. But, you know, MySpace. I mean, you want to be depressed?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good way to do it because, you know, it's pretty amazing what kids are doing, what kids are claiming they're doing, whether they're doing them or not, what they were put up about themselves. And so we have to, first of all, be honest. We can't assume that there is such a thing as good girls and bad girls or good boys and bad boys, okay, just based on whether somebody is sitting in a youth group or not. And thirdly, I think we really have to have faith, and I think this is very true, that beneath all of the bluster and beneath all of the posing, that kids really don't want, you know, they don't see a hooking up culture as an ideal.
Right.
Right.
They don't. You know, and there are a lot of ways you can sort of, you know, sort of enter this conversation. You can say, okay, imagine yourself a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And I come back to this time and time and again in the book, is imagine yourself a parent. Would you want your son engaging in this kind of behavior? Of course not. Of course not. Well, then why is it okay for you? And actually, you know, just as a brief aside, I think that's a really good way to think about moral questions, discernment questions, not just for kids but for all of us, is to sort of turn it around and say, you know, if your best friend came to you with this problem or this issue, what would you tell them? You know, and if you want the best for your best friend, why don't you want the best for yourself? If you think your best friend, you know, should have the courage of her convictions, why shouldn't you? And so it is with kids. They, you know, if you ask them, you know, they don't want to be, if you ask them and say, okay, do you want to be like 60 years old and have been married 4 times or never have been married but have slept with 70 people, and, you know, is that sort of your ideal life? Well, of course not. No, this is my ideal. And then to try to work through just the very logical and real process of how do we become a person that is capable of fidelity? How do we become a person who is capable of deep love and sacrificial love and all that kind of thing? But again, you always have to do it understanding the power of hormones, the power of peers, the power of the desire to be loved, and, you know, the wreckage that these kids come from. So it's really hard, but I think you're right in that, you know, the theology of the body is a, you know, just a wonderful way to frame this for them because it touches the deepest desires, God-given desires of their own heart that they know are there.
Well, I think you're right. And it, for many of them, I think what Prove It You in a very big way does is it helps them to see first that there's a true dignity to their own creation, that they are so cared for and so loved that God has created you.
Right.
But it calls you to see the dignity in every aspect of life and that what can you do to nurture that? I mean, as an expression. And I think that's the sad thing in today's culture, isn't it, Amy, that we don't have an appreciation for the dignity of the gift of life in all its forms.
That's right. And furthermore, you know, we live in a consumer culture in which everything and everybody is a commodity. And, you know, I have to say, though, I really think that, you know, not to put any more pressure on parents than we already have, that, you know, parents play such an important role in this. We can't control how our kids feel about themselves. You know, we can't, you know, push a button and make them feel okay. You know, sometimes despite everything that we do and all the positive nurturing and reinforcement that we give them, you know, a 16-year-old girl is still going to walk around feeling like crap, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a hard thing to fight against. But we have to be very careful, I think, ourselves, even with our best intentions, to make sure that our children understand that they are valued for who they are, that if they bring home a bad report card, if they get fired from their job, if they, you know, are not going to get into the best college or not going to go to college at all, that doesn't define them, you know, and that they are valuable no matter, you know, whether they're in a million activities or no activities. You know, they are valuable and loved because God loved them enough to want them to exist, and you just can't stop talking about that. You can't stop communicating that to kids. And you can't assume because, you know, you had this conversation or you think they maybe got it when they were 10, that now that they're 15, that they still get it.
Right.
Yeah. I think one of the important things, too, Amy, you point out, you know, we've been talking a bit about sexuality and stuff, is that as we look at the dignity of life from conception to natural death, that like with sexuality, as you put forward, I think it's really important for us to get our principles straight with our kids. As you point out, once we do that, everything else falls into place. I mean, and there are moral absolutes for life that we need to know that they're hearing because the culture is telling them something else.
Right. And actually, I was talking to Greg and Lisa Popchak about this the other day on their show, and you know, you don't know what's going to happen to your kids in the future. You can't provide specifically for every contingency, but the best we can do, and what we are obligated to do, is to provide them, as you say, that core, not just that core teaching, core understanding, but the opportunity to develop a core relationship with Jesus Christ. You know, I have a chapter on love in the book, and you know, there are so many ways that our culture talks about and misinterprets what love is, mm-hmm. incorrectly defines love. But if we teach our children from the time they are small, or even, you know, it's never too late, if we start teaching them now, mm-hmm. that if we want to know what love is, we look to the cross, we look to Jesus, and that is what love is, you know, then, you know, it plants a seed, okay? It plants a seed so that no matter what kind of weird circumstance they come to later, you know, again, there's no guarantees, no promises that everything is going to work out, because it never does, but, never, you know, consistently. But the point is that we've given them the basic of what is love? Okay, if someone is telling me that they love me, how can I evaluate whether this is true? How can I evaluate what I'm feeling inside, whether what I'm feeling and what those feelings are sort of moving me to do is really love? Okay, well, what is love? Jesus is love. You know, let mm-hmm. me compare. And so, you know, wherever life takes them, if we've really put Christ, I think, and his love and his definition as love at the centrality, you know, tried to put it at the center of their consciousness and their discernment, we've done a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's why that cover is so compelling on this, because it could be just something that it's about you, your own individual person, but
right.
it's not, again, just about you, because Christ came and died for you.
Right.
That's how unique and how remarkable you are, and that there can be that relationship that can be fostered and developed, and you can grow in that, just like, as in the saints, the relationship with the saints that are such great models of that dependency and trust.
Yeah, and you know, one of the points I make over and over in the book, and this relates to what you were just saying, Chris, was that, you know, again, our culture holds up all kinds of role models. Our culture holds up all kinds of ideals as to what a good, successful person is all about. But, and quite often in our culture, religious faith is seen as and presented as a constraint on those possibilities,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As a limitation on those possibilities. And I think one of the greatest gifts we can give our kids is to teach them and to hold up to them the witness of other disciples of Jesus, the holy men and women and children, the saints, who have come to Christ and discovered not a prison, but the very opposite. They've discovered that they are being released from chains. And we can, you know, just start from figures in the Gospels, moving to Paul, moving to more contemporary converts and people who have come to Christ. And this is so important for kids, because that is how many kids, if not most kids, do see religion, as is a constraint on their true selves and their freedom and all of that kind of thing. And so, you know, if we can invite them to look critically at, you know, what is it that they feel that they are called to be in life? What do they feel pressured to do? And to really look critically at all this stuff and to see if that is real freedom, or if, in fact, it might actually be a very heavy set of chains. Okay, now, so what is going to free you from that? How about the knowledge and the conviction that you are loved
mm-hmm.
as you are called to be greater, you are called to be more, like God every day, but that you are loved, and that you don't have to pretend, you don't have to fake it, you don't have to live up to anybody else's expectations except this one who loves you and knows you the most, who is the Lord. And that's freedom. And so if we can, we can teach them what true love is, and if we can teach them what true freedom is. You talk to any teenager who is in a school setting, your heart breaks from the pressures that they feel and the fact that, all day they're in situations in which they're under this heavy, heavy pressure to basically perform, to be, funny, sarcastic, smart, beautiful, popular, all that kind of thing. And I asked several times in the book, wouldn't it be great to just be free of all that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, following Christ is. And people, through history, through 2,000 years of history, haven't followed Christ because it made them feel constrained and made them feel less themselves. No, they joyfully follow Christ because in him they find freedom. And so, that's one way that we need to tap into the sort of natural adolescent desire to be themselves, which mm-hmm. is good, and to teach them and to guide them that, just as love is found in Christ, so is real freedom. That freedom that you want so badly, it's in Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the key to what you just said, Amy, too, is that you have to talk with them. And because we've talked to Father Andrew Somm, for example, who's the director of theology at Scott Catholic High School here, or even from the folks from Boys Town who go all over and do workshops, they'll tell you that you could talk to a teen about how to use a condom, and within 5-10 minutes they're squirming, they feel uncomfortable, they don't want to be there. It's not pleasant. You can just read the body language, but talk to them about what is real love. Talk to them about why they were created, and they will sit and they will engage in a conversation that could go on for hours.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't do that. I mean, we just presume that they are not going to want to talk about that, or we're afraid because we don't know how to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And, we can't be afraid. So much of this comes down to, our own busy lives. I remember when I was a very young, much younger mother, and my oldest children were toddlers, basically, so we're talking 20 years ago. I was part of a women's group that met occasionally, and I remember one woman who was probably the age I am now with teenage children, just saying, what you have to do is you just have to be present to them, and you have to, watch, you have to sit up, be there at, 11:30 Saturday night when they're watching MTV, and you just have to be there, and you have to, because those are the moments
mm-hmm.
that they're going to talk. They're probably not going to spill their guts sitting around the dinner table before they have to rush out to practice.
Right.
But,
yep.
but mm-hmm. You just, if this really matters to you, if their sense, if their connection with Christ and their, planting the seeds of a lifelong relationship with Christ and the joy that brings really matters, we have to walk the walk, which means if we're talking to them that love is sacrifice, we have to live it, and we have to sacrifice if we love them.
Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah.
We're talking with Amy Welburn, and it's the Prove It series, particularly this book, Prove It You, I think is, well, they're all, I can't find a favorite because they're all outstanding.
Thank you.
But I think this is one of those things that parents, if you're listening, you need to get this. Sit down and read it first yourself, because I think this is what helps give you some vocabulary, helps give you the language at least. And then just put it on the table, or put it somewhere where they can pick it up and begin to read it, because I think you'll find they'll be very engaged. And I hope DREs are out there listening, and youth ministers as well, because Amy's stuff is just too good not to be using in your program.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, Amy, we appreciate your taking time, as always, to be here with our listeners. Any final thoughts as we wrap up this morning?
As I've said before, a lot of the sort of movement in or concern in Catholic thinking about catechesis over the past 20 years has been around the concept of Catholic identity and making sure our kids stay Catholic and all that kind of thing. And that's good only as far as it goes. Because as I think Pope Benedict makes very clear to us every time he speaks, that the issue is our relationship with Christ, which is most you know, mm-hmm. happens through the church, of
right.
course,
mm-hmm.
the
yeah.
body of Christ.
Yep.
But, you know, we have to, when we're dealing with our kids, it's really important for us to sort of look beyond, you know, whether they're wearing their Catholic high school sweatshirt or whether they're saying their prayers, and to really have the courage, and it does take courage for a parent to do this, to say, are you okay? You know, you seem okay, but I just want to make sure you're okay. And to say, you know, this is the time that we're, you know, talking of thinking in the church year about the coming of Christ in our lives. And, you know, I just want to, you know, sort of open it up for you and say, you know, how are you feeling about yourself? You know, are you feeling, you know, the love of God? Is there anything that I can do? Is there any particular area of pain, you know, difficulty that you're having right now? And to, you know, to do that, not on our own time, but on their own time, and just to have the courage sometimes to hear stuff that's going to disturb us or bother us or hurt us, but to be there because, you know, we need to let Christ love these kids through us.
Hmm. Beautifully said.
Amen.
Well,
an amen on that.
I hope you'll say hello to your wonderful husband, Michael.
I will.
And also, I'm waiting for the study guide to the Hope document. Are you going to be working on that soon, or are you have it finished?
Actually, I did a pamphlet for it.
Oh,
great.
Well, perfect.
Yeah,
perfect. When's it coming out?
I should be in early January.
Perfect again.
Yeah. Wonderful.
I did it. I wrote it the day after it came out. So
why am I not surprised?
Well, I had no choice.
Well, Amy, thanks again so much for being with us. We really appreciate it. God bless you. Amy Welburn, everybody.
Oh, yes. The studio audiences applauding.
Yep.
Yes, that's beautiful. Thanks again, Amy. And Merry Christmas.
Oh, you too. Thanks a lot.